So I think this was a pretty big stressor for us very early on when we started selling tickets and we realized that there were so many more women than men. And oh man, getting men to participate or getting men to sign up and to actually convert into buying tickets was an incredibly, incredibly big stressor.
Welcome to the Brown Girl Podcast. This show was created to elevate the voices and perspectives of dual identity South Asians around the world. Here we have conversations on topics and issues that impact our community, as well as share the stories of personal successes and the struggles that often go unsaid. My name is Julie George, and I'm your host.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Brown Girl Podcast. Today, we have a little bit of a different flavor of podcasting. I mentioned in earlier episodes that I was really busy this summer with planning a speed dating event for the Malayali Christian community called Fallen Malayal Love, or FIM, as we like to call it. It took place on September 9th, 2023 in Dallas. And the whole process was a roller coaster of emotions in the best way possible. Overall, I would say the event was a success. A lot of happy faces, smiling faces, and people who are really glad they came. And so today we are talking all of the behind the scenes of this event. And I'm joined by Matt George, who I had partnered with to create and host this event. By the way, we are not related. We just happen to have the same last name. And so we had a handful of questions that people submitted that they wanted us to talk through. We had thrown up an Instagram question box a while back. So we're just going to be running through those questions and giving you all the details of why we started it, the application process, how the finances worked, things we would have done differently, the team that we onboarded, what you can expect in the future, and just everything in between. So I hope you guys enjoy, and thanks again for listening.
Started recording?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, before we get started, let me just start by saying that 10 seconds ago, Julie, for the first time in her life, revealed to me that she enjoys reading Yahoo News, guys. Yahoo News! You are sometimes such a boomer. I can't.
It's actually a really great place to get some quick news. Like,
I can't.
Hey, you know what? The fact that Yahoo News still exists proves that there are people who use it.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay, so are you ready to do this recording?
I'm ready to do this recording.
Okay, so I guess, you know, we had all these listener submitted questions about Fallen Malayal Love, the speed dating event that we hosted. Maybe before we dive into the questions, so the first question, by the way, is what inspired us to create this event? I think for context, it would be helpful if we gave kind of like a quick timeline of the last 6 months, because I think that'll help better conceptualize the details that we'll get into with the question. So basically on March 24th, 2023, Matt and I had a conversation where we agreed that we would partner together to host a speed dating event for our community. And so between March 24th and like the first week of May, we were having weekly brainstorming meetings, you know, talking about what we wanted this to be. What are we going to call it? Brand colors, just general framework, website, et cetera, et cetera. And then the first week of May was when we officially announced on social media that we were going to be putting on this speed dating event. You know, we didn't have any logistics or dates or anything sorted out. We just put it out there. Hey, we're going to be planning a speed dating event. If you're single, if you have single friends, tell them to sign up for our interest forum and we'll go from there. June, we secured the venue, we announced the date, and then we started sending out invitations for people to actually buy tickets. July, we kicked off our volunteer team to help with the actual event planning. And then in September, September 9th was when we had our actual event. So from March 24th through September 9th was less than 6 months. Like, that's crazy. That's like so crazy that we were able to bring this idea to life within 6 months.
Yeah, so, agreed.
Yeah.
Thanks for looking up all of those dates. I did not have them on hand at all. I would have been like, yeah, a couple months ago we did this and that. And here Julie's like, yeah, on exactly this day at this time, this message was sent and executed. And thank you, Julie. This dynamic right here is going to be explored deeper into this conversation, as you guys will all hear. But
we're like night and day in some ways. So the first question that was submitted was, what inspired you to create this event? So I guess let me kick off by sharing where my headspace was at, and then I'll kick it over to Matt so he can kind of share where his headspace at. So what?
Sure.
So I had been wanting to host some kind of community event for a while. You know, I was interested in the idea of hosting an event where I could meet people and hang out. I didn't have any specific idea of like what type of event, but the idea of organizing something had been recurring on my mind. And so one day I got an Instagram DM from a podcast listener literally asking me, hey, do you ever host events? Like I'm looking for ways to connect with people from the community. And I was like, this is my sign. This is my sign from the universe, from God. I've been thinking about it for a while. And now someone is literally in my DMs asking if I host events. And so that very day, that was March 24th, I sent Matt a DM. And I literally screenshotted that DM that I had received. And I said, hey, Matt, I've been wanting to host an event for a while. I'm taking this DM that I received as my sign. Would you want to partner together to host an event? And it's funny because I did not know Matt very well at the time. So I had been following Matt, though, the Mulu Trump account from back in like 2020. But then I had him on as a guest on the podcast just 2 months before. So we podcasted together January of 2023. So that was my only actual interaction of talking to him on a personal level. But like, really, we were still strangers, you know? And I think why I wanted to reach out to Matt specifically was, well, one, I wanted to host it with someone because I just figured, you know, two people putting their heads together would make a much greater impact. I wanted to do it with a creator who like had an audience because that was important. It was important that it was someone who didn't shy away from like public engagement, putting their face name out there, which you kind of have to do when you're hosting an event. And I had just met Matt because of the podcast like 2 months before. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I think he could be a great partner to do it with this.
Why are you laughing? Why are you laughing at that? You're laughing as if there's an inkling of regret in there.
No, it's just that like it was so random, you know? Okay. I just knew you from your account and I was like, he seems funny. He seems nice. We had this one interaction on the podcast. I think we could work together. And he seems competent, which, by the way, Matt is very competent. But at the time, you know, I was like, yeah, he seems like he would be like a good person to like partner with. And so that was kind of where my headspace was at. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to kind of take my chance and send him a note and see what he says. And so that's how it started. So I'll let Matt take it from here.
So Julie, you like authentic experiences, don't you? Like you care about things being authentic. Is that correct?
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm about to drop a bomb on your podcast. All right. I did not tell you this in the last 7 months. And I only realized this when you sent me that message. The person who had actually messaged you was actually my ex-girlfriend.
What?
I know. I know. So you send me the screenshot. I opened it and I'm just like, oh my God. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to process that. But I'm just like, nah, ignore it. Just focus on the fact that Julie was the host at the event. Guys, I wish you could see me face energy.
I'm at DM. Okay. Okay,
yeah, Julie has just, yeah, I knew that would be surprised. Well, that's the truth. So I saw that. I'm just like, oh my God, this is my ex-girlfriend who reached out to Julie. But then I was like, you know what, Julie, like, yeah, I guess the idea of speed dating has been on my mind because I'd heard someone mention it. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. Speed dating is pretty cool. But I wasn't acting on it at all. So when Julie messaged me, that was sort of the catalyst. I'm like, you know what, I think I'd be down for speed dating. But I knew Julie was dating someone. So then I also said, I'm like, but I know you're dating someone, so this is probably of no interest to you. And Julie's like, no, it's still very much of interest to me. I would love to host a speed dating event. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, there you have it. And we came to a consensus within seconds of that conversation. We just agreed. We're like, cool, this is the path. And from there, everything Julie said was accurate. So that was the origin story.
Hey, y'all, quick break here to share about our event's gold sponsor, Timeless Moments Event Planning, a full-service event planning company. If you are looking to plan a wedding, anniversary celebration, birthday extravaganza, or any other special gathering, make sure you check out Timeless Moments Event Planning. Created by longtime friends Amy, Ashley, and Joyce, their tailored approach ensures perfection for events of all sizes, letting you savor your special day while they work their magic. They're based out of Texas and New York, but they are open to traveling anywhere around the world. Mention FIM or this podcast and receive $250 off any package. Check them out at www.timelessmomentsep.com or view the show notes for more details. And now back to our episode.
So were you afraid there would not be enough interest?
Oh, man. Yeah. So this was the hardest thing, actually. So when we decided to launch this, we discussed it and we're like, the biggest thing that could make this a failure is if we don't get enough people. And I come from a marketing capacity and I know for a fact that the number of people who sign up for, you know, expressing interest in something, only a fraction of that ends up converting into real, actual people who end up participating in an event or in the context of marketing, who ends up converting as a customer, so to speak. So I think this was a pretty big stressor for us very, very early on when we started selling tickets and we realized that there were so many more women than men. And oh man, getting men to participate or getting men to sign up and to actually convert into buying tickets was an incredibly, incredibly big stressor for me and Julie personally.
Yeah.
Do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I think specifically with men, I mean, we had a couple like specific push strategies, right, to get more men to actually buy tickets. One of the things that we ended up doing, which worked amazingly, was compiling and aggregating all of that data of the women who had bought tickets and like sharing those anonymized stats of like who they are, what they do, circulating that. And I think that post got over 200 shares. So we saw a wave of men purchase tickets after that. But I think one concern for me was also, well, okay, so let me backtrack. So when we originally shared the original post on Instagram back in May, that post, I looked all of this up. That post to date has been shared over 2,200 times. So like, we knew there was a lot of buzz and excitement, but like Matt said, how much of that is actually going to convert to ticket sales? But I think one thing for me specifically was also concerns around like, are people going to be willing to fly and travel to attend an event, right? Like no one really knows what to expect. So for the people that aren't local to Dallas, are they going to be willing to spend hundreds of dollars to buy a plane ticket, get a hotel, buy the event ticket just for a single night? But I do remember when we sent out that first batch of invitations, we had someone buy a ticket literally within like 3 minutes or something.
Yeah. There were some people who definitely know what they need to do to get into a long-term relationship. And they're like, yep, this opportunity's here. I'm going to take it. And then there were so many people who were on the edge for so long.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening later on is Julie and I would literally call people. We'd literally text and call people like, hey, we want to make sure that you received our invitation, because sometimes emails land in spam. We wanted to make sure that you got it. And in the event that you got it, like if you have any questions, let me have a conversation with you. And what I found from talking to a lot of the men was a lot of the men were right at the edge. They wanted to, but they were like nervous. They didn't know anyone was going and they were just very much on the edge. So we realized that a lot of people had that mentality.
Yeah. So our goal was to sell 150 tickets. We wanted an even ratio of men and women. We ended up selling 147 tickets. And honestly, like that last week or two, we had a bunch of people that were applying and wanted to come. And I think we could have definitely sold more tickets. But we also started to realize at that point, the logistics of the speed dating was like better with less people. Plus, just from a planning standpoint, you kind of have to like, you know, draw a line in the sand somewhere. But with that being said, we had 147 that bought tickets and then 125 people actually showed up because there were, you know, last minute cancellations, no shows, et cetera. So,
yeah.
Okay, so did we individually participate in the speed dating? So I am in a relationship, so I did not. But I will say that watching everyone and hearing everyone's stories, it sounds so fun. Like, I would have loved to speed date. Like, I don't know if there's friends speed dating or something that would be cool. But Matt, did you speed date? And
I did not speed date.
Did you want to speed date?
I wanted to. It seemed like a lot of fun, but I think I shared a story about this at some point, but as someone who was hosting this, it seemed incredibly improper for me to like be speed dating as well. So no, I did not speed date. But I will say this though, hypothetically, if I was a participant, this is someone else's event, and I had a really good speed date with a girl, and then 5 minutes later, I see her speed dating another guy and she's like laughing and having a good time, I would feel a type of way. I'd be like, wait, I thought I was making you laugh. Why are you laughing at his jokes? So I don't know if I would be able to handle speed dating like that. Mm. I know I'd feel a type of way.
So what about in future events that we host? Would you want to participate?
I want to participate, but I think so long as I'm one of the people hosting, then no. Mm. I don't think I should. That's my answer. Wait, let me ask you this, though, and I'm sorry in advance. I apologize to you, Aaron, for this hypothetical, but hypothetically, Julie, if you were single, would you feel okay participating, even being a host?
I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah,
you understand.
It inevitably feels like I have an upper hand because of the fact that we're hosting, and so there's already like a lot of attention drawn to us.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, did you receive any negative reactions or backlash from the community as you were building this event?
I can speak a little bit to that. So I think with some of the older people, and I know this because I hear things through the grapevine, through my mom and stuff, a lot of people, they didn't initially understand what speed dating was. So to them, this seemed like some amount of debauchery almost. It's like, wait, what's happening? What is this speed dating? Is it some sort of sinful activity? So to a lot of people who didn't comprehend, and I don't blame them because this hasn't existed in our community, right? So no one knows what this is. They just know that there's a lot of cool advertising and we're talking about single men and women coming together. There's going to be drinks. So I think there's definitely a cohort of people who didn't understand what speed dating was. And as a result, they defaulted to the worst possible thing of what it could be. And it's like an immoral activity very early on. What about you, Julia? Did you get any negative reactions?
Yes. So only one, really. I had one interaction. I think for the most part, we had an overwhelming amount of support, right? But at the same time, anytime you do anything that's dealing with the general public, you're inevitably going to get some percentage of people that are not going to be happy. And so I was really bracing myself for people to be upset. And so I think occasionally when we would get messages like the one that I got, or I think there was a few that you had gotten too, Matt, later on in the summer, I didn't really allow it to affect me because I just chalked it up as, well, this is what it is. It just comes with the territory. The one person I can think of that personally sent me a message. So this was back in May when we first announced that we were doing this event. We're circulating the interest forms. And I had promoted it on this one Malayali Facebook group that I was part of. And so this Malayali Hindu lady sent me a message saying she was really disappointed that we were excluding Malayali Hindus from the event and that we were only tailoring it to Christians and this and that. And I mean, it was one of those things that's kind of sorry, but not sorry, because we're not talking about just any old activity to bring a bunch of people together and hang out, right? We're talking about creating an event that has a specific purpose of connecting people for the purposes of dating and marriage and potentially marriage and things like that. And so the idea of a romantic partnership where there's similarities in terms of culture and especially religion is important to a lot of people. So in that sense, we were not trying to cast the net wide, and especially because there was all these other matchmaking events that were, happening at the time. And one of the common points of feedback from Malayali Christians who attended was that there was not enough Malayali Christians at the event. There wasn't enough representation from the Malayali Christian community, which is the bridge that we wanted to fill or whatever. So she was the only person I can remember that vocalized her disapproval to me. But then, Matt, there was that one girl that had sent you the message, right? Later in the summer. This is before we had provided transparency on what went into the selection process, but she was pretty upset. And then she compared being invited to FIM as equivalent to getting Harvard.
I totally forgot about that.
Equivalent to getting into Harvard?
I kind of want to pull that up because it was super. I understand it was upsetting from her perspective, but we had women were applying at a ratio of 2 to 1. So by the end of it, we had 400 female applications for 75 spots, right? So we definitely prioritized people who, did it first, who filled out a lot more of the questions. And she, she did not fill out some of the questions that said, hey, what are you looking for? What are your deal breakers? What are you looking for in a man? We asked some of these questions. She didn't fill it out. And she vented out to me and she's like, hey, I submitted this form and I still haven't heard back. This is we're trying to get into Harvard. We're waiting to hear back from you. My friends and I, we're not hearing back from you guys. What's happening? So I calmly replied saying, hey, you know, there's a process and we're still waiting for more men, blah, blah, blah. But wow, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
But before we wrap up this question, because I have something that's a kind of a counterweight to all of this. Can I talk about that now, Julie?
Yeah, go for it.
So I have like an Insta DM relationship with this Ciro Utchin. And I didn't tell you this, Julie, but he messaged me 2 days ago. He goes, when is the next event? Thinking of coming to support. So this is like a Ciro Utchin, right? So I haven't replied to him because I'm not sure how to put it delicately. I love that you're supporting this so openly, but it wouldn't really be proper for an Utchin to be in an environment where people are trying to speed it. They don't want to see an Utchin there. So I'm going to reply to him soon. But I think it's cool. Like, we got a whole Utchin supporting us, really.
So the amount of people that like wanted to come watch as spectators was really funny.
Like, it was so funny. One of my mom's friends with 100% seriousness was saying, hey, I'm a doctor. If you guys need a doctor on call, I'm happy to be there. Because she's looking for any reason to be there. But they understand that it has to be a value exchange, right? Yeah. Why would you have an auntie there?
Right.
So it's like, hey, I'm willing to be like a doctor on call for you. But I'm like, thank you, auntie. But I'm pretty sure like there are several doctors already who are participating.
So, yeah.
Which is true. We had a slate of extremely qualified professionals, but
yeah.
Anyways.
Okay, next question. How do the finances work for this type of event? Do you get all of your money back through ticket sales?
Yeah, so our two streams were from ticket sales and sponsorships. And I guess, Julie, if you want to talk more about the money stuff.
Yeah, so we did not make any money from this event, okay? Just to be clear, I wish we could say we made money. I wish we could have said we made $5.
I wish we could have said we broke even.
But we did not. So we took a loss, and that loss was absorbed personally by Matt and I. Like Matt said, you know, our plan was to recoup all of our expenses through ticket sales and sponsorships. And we had a decent amount of sponsors, but the main reason why we absorbed a loss was because we significantly undercharged for tickets. So we charged $75 a ticket. And for the first batch of people we invited, we even offered a $10 promo. And so $75, that is so cheap considering all that we provided, like full dinner, 4 drink tickets, the venue, games, entertainment, like so many things were included that $75 was a steal. And so, you know, when it was all said and done and all the vendors and everyone was paid, we definitely ended with a loss, not like an exorbitant amount, but it was a loss. And I think a big function of that was neither Matt or I have ever planned a big event, right? Like, we've never planned a wedding. If you ask anyone who has planned a wedding, they will likely tell you that, like, whatever amount they initially planned to spend, they ended up spending way more. And it's crazy when you plan an event, like how quickly things add up, stuff comes up that you weren't expecting, vendors giving you one quote and then not realizing it doesn't include like these 12 other things that you assumed were just included.
Right.
And so,
right.
You know, I think like back in April when we were planning, we had put together like a really rough P&L or like a really rough budget. We got some quotes from vendors, put some estimates together for like catering, blah, 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 these other components. And we even added in some buffer and kind of sketched out like, okay, here's what we think it'll cost. Here's what feels like a reasonable price range to charge. And so before we started selling tickets, we had communicated some like FAQs, including like a rough range of prices that people could expect. And so I think what we had communicated was like $60 to $80. And so when we started selling tickets in June, we priced it at $75, which at the time we were comfortable with. But, you know, lo and behold, the expenses just came in like way more. I think that unless you're planning an event, unless you're in the event planning business, you probably don't realize how expensive all of this stuff is. Because I remember I was like talking to one of the attendees during the event weekend, and he was also a friend, like I'd known him before the event, but he was like, yeah, you know, you guys must have made a killing on this event. And like, I almost spit out my drink because I was like,
right,
you think we made a killing? Like, no, this $75 ticket barely covered the cost of the venue, let alone thousands and thousands of dollars that we spent on everything else, food, alcohol, equipment, games, activities, like rental chairs, table, like, you know, all of this stuff. And so,
yeah, Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of inexperience, at least from, I'll speak to myself. So we found a venue, right? And we liked it. We're like, oh my God, yeah, we'll book it for exactly 4 hours. And in my mind, it's like, cool, we'll come in a few hours earlier and we'll like set it up. And like later on, we're like, yeah, can we come at this time to set it up? She's like, yep, it'll be $400 an hour to start setting up. We're like, wait, what? That's the price of the venue. She goes, yeah, you have to pay to be in the room at all. Right. So we had to come in advance and we were paying for every second that we were there, which is something that I had no idea of. In my mind, it's like, okay, we're paying for the time that our guests are there, but setup should be included. That's what I thought. You know, mm-hmm. again, a novice
right.
in this area.
Well, yeah, I mean, even with the venue, like the price that we quote estimated back in April, we ended up paying that lady literally 5x what we had originally right. thought back in April. So yeah, we were just very naive to the event planning process. Yeah. And like, you know, one of the questions that someone submitted was, what would you have done differently? And so as far as pricing, since we're already talking about it, like we should have definitely charged more for tickets to reflect the full value of the offerings and the inclusions and all of that. And then I think also having some kind of like structured tiered pricing system based on time, which is a very standard practice in event planning, right? Like similar yeah. to when if you're signing up for a marathon or a 10K or whatever, like if you get your tickets by this date, you know, the price is this. If you wait till next month, the price goes up. And it would have also made sense from like just making the event planning and like kind of organizing the logistics and stuff so much easier, because there's so many decisions that have to be made hinging on the number of people coming. And so being able to have a more finalized number of people attending earlier in the planning phase will just help things run so much smoother. And people are going to be a lot more inclined to make a decision when they know that there's a price change associated with waiting. So
thanks.
Yeah. So all that to say, when we do FIM again in the future, the prices are not going to be $75.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. My God.
Okay. Next question. How did you choose the selection of applications to best optimize matches?
Yeah. So we created a whole post about this on our Instagram, which details a lot of the specifics, but a high level overview of that process was it was all extremely data driven. I think I would say 90 to 95% of the criteria that we used to determine who gets an invite was based like quantitatively. What were you looking for? What were you open to dating? Kids, no kids, smoking, all of these various questions, a lot of similar ones that you would find on dating apps. We incorporated that and we had a prioritized list of those who would have the most number of potential matches in the dating pool, because it made no sense to invite someone who we thought was great, but who would have no matches. I had to turn away a personal friend of mine who did not want children. We ran this individual through our matchmaking algorithm and they would have zero matches at the event because everybody there wanted a child. Mm-hmm. So since we're trying to foster a community and event that is conducive to long-term relationships, it wouldn't have made sense. And it pained me to say no to her, but I'm like, hey, like, here's the reality. Like, I want to make sure that you would have a good time if you would come, but you wouldn't have.
Right.
So it was very much a data-driven thing. And, you know, in the event that there were like tiebreakers, we looked into, well, Julie did much more of this, like looked into, you want to talk about the qualitative factors?
Yeah. So one of the first things that we did was, well, we had hundreds and hundreds of applications, right? Like to this day, we had over like 600 applications. And so I think one, like we mentioned earlier, was we prioritized the people who took the time to actually fill out the full application, tell us who they are, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then from there, we were also like individually reviewing each and every person, which was a very time consuming process. So looking at their application, do they check out in terms of who they say they are, what they do, right? Like the information that they provided to us in their application, were we able to validate that on the internet? We were like straight up doing like social media searches, finding them on LinkedIn, their professional websites. And then also like looking at, are there any red flags or things that seemed off about their application that made us question their intentions or like, you know, whether or not they were applying for the right reasons, et cetera. And then like Matt said, there was that element of, would they be a good candidate to attend a speed dating event, right? How open are they? Speed dating thrives on openness. So the more open that people are in their dating preferences and criteria and what they're looking for, the better the collective dating pool is for everyone, because everyone has a greater chance of success, right? Like there's a greater mutual compatibility amongst a wider number of people. So yeah, so, you know, Matt, do you want to, you mentioned the algorithm. So do you want to talk about the algorithm that you built specifically for the matching?
For sure. So we collected a lot of different data points. Some of it was qualitative, some of it was quantitative and based on categories. And we wrote something that would match people within the same dating pool to see who would be a good potential match and who would be an unknown match. And the only distinction between a potential match and an unknown match is denomination preferences. So I know a lot of Julie's listeners aren't, or some of your listeners aren't from the Malay community. So you can be multiple variations of Christian. So we tried to factor that in as well, just to optimize for that, because people tend to prefer dating within their same denomination. So we created an algorithm that would match people based on that. And I think the much more challenging aspect of things, which, and I will credit him later on when we start talking about teams, was in creating a schedule for this entire process. Because we had a finite number amount of time, we had a finite number of tables, and it was just an enormous logistical like nightmare. And we had to figure out how to schedule people. And we ended up doing that successfully. But I can speak more to that when we get to the team section, because there is an individual who deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah.
With that specific algorithm. So we'll get to that soon.
Yeah. Okay. So there were a few questions from several people around this general theme of like success of the event, success stories in terms of matching. And so I think we should first define what success is. What this person was probably asking was, did any relationships form? And I think that's something only time will tell, because, well, today is October 19th. Our event was September 9th. You know, it was only been like just over a month. I do think that, Matt, maybe perhaps like we can do a checkpoint at the 6-month mark or something, right, to collect some data on if any relationships have formed.
Sure.
But we do have some other metrics that I think we can talk through. And so the way the event worked was we had everyone do their speed dates, and then we had communicated like, hey, during your speed dates, don't worry about exchanging contact information, because we wanted to avoid people feeling pressured to give their number when they didn't want to, but they're being put on the spot, so they feel obligated to. And so we had a workflow set in place where after the event was over, we sent everyone a form that said, hey, mark all of the participants that you would want to get connected with. And if there's mutual interest, we as event organizers will pass along the contact information, and then you guys can take it from there. So based on that, we had 65% of participants have at least one mutual match. But we know that is a really conservative number, because we know that there are some people who, because they had already exchanged contact information at the event or throughout the weekend with people that they liked, they did not fill out the form, or they filled out the form, but they didn't mark that particular person because they already had the contact information. So there are some of those instances that we know exist. So we think the number is actually a little bit more than 65%, but that's kind of like the minimum conservative number that we have. And then I think, Matt, you did some analytics this week where you have, I don't know.
I'm actually still finalizing that. Okay. You said I could have until tomorrow,
yeah.
Julie. If Julie, you should know this. I will do things at the very last minute.
I've learned.
Okay. I'm so sorry, podcast listeners. But yes, that's going to be a separate post altogether where there's some more in-depth analysis.
But like, also, I want to point out that a week after the event was over, we had sent out feedback forms for participants. And one of the questions was, if you had mutual matches, have you started the process of getting to know them? And pretty much everyone said yes. And so I think there was like a few, you know, one-off instances, like one person said 2 out of the 3 matches have not responded or something. One person I remember said that they had a match, but then it ended a day after or something. I don't know. So there's like a few one-off instances, but the overwhelming majority of people at the time of when we collected that survey results, they had stated they have started the process of getting to know their matches, which is very positive.
Yeah. And I think one little funny moment, though, is this one individual reached out to us saying, hey, why did I match? I'm just pulling a random number. Why did I match with participant 50? I didn't select them. And we showed them the information that she filled up. We're like, yeah, you did select them. She goes, oh, I think I was drunk.
Oh my God.
And when we showed her the form that she filled out, she's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, right, right. That's funny. Okay, next thing is that we're going to talk, there was feedback from participants. So I don't know if you already have it open, but I would say overall, we had a tremendous amount of gratitude and appreciation from, you know, people that attended the event, just how much fun they had, how thoughtful it was. And, you know, when we sent out that feedback form, like, people were literally writing paragraphs about how great of a time they had. Like, one person literally wrote that they felt proud to be a Malayali after the event. And that statement alone is, like, chilling, right? Like, what an amazing feeling, for sure.
Yeah. And I can read a couple of the candid reviews. So we sent this out. How many days after the event did we send this out?
I'm assuming like a week and a half, maybe.
So here's one. It was a quote. It was a really great way to get less pessimistic and more optimistic about the dating scene. Face-to-face interactions really do get the ball moving in a different way. Everyone I met was so chill that it made the actual speed dating a lot less intimidating. Another review. For this being the first time that FIM happened, I was blown away by how well everything was organized. The day in itself was fantastic. The venue looked beautiful. The agenda was very thought out. The extra activities were entertaining. And I even met some new gal pals. Even if I didn't fall in love, it was a fun way to make new friends. I can read one more. Oh my gosh, some of these are so long. I'm going to stick with something that's short. I was thoroughly impressed with the thought and effort that was put into matching people during the speed dating event. It ensured that every conversation you had had some sort of mutual goals / similarities in what they want in a relationship. There was a genuine desire for people to intentionally connect with one another with the help of the FIM leadership team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are so many reviews. Some of these are so long. It would take too long to read them. But yeah, those are some of it. Yeah.
One story. So as far as like friendships, I mean, even for me, I feel like I gained amazing friends through FIM between both our volunteer teams and also just the attendees that I met at the event. And like one specific story that I want to share is one of the attendees who was at the event. I remember talking to her for a while, like during that weekend. And she also happens to live in Austin. And I hope she doesn't mind me saying this, but we do have the same name. So she's also Julie. But anyways, I remember like talking to her for a while and I was like, oh my God, she seems really cool. Like, I want to be her friend. And so we ended up getting dinner shortly after the event. And we talked a lot about FIM and she was, you know, sharing about her experience at the event. And she was saying that she met a lot of really great guys at the event through the speed dating. And perhaps, you know, they may not be like forever life partners, but they were such great humans and they had amazing conversations during the 4-minute sessions. And she was like, yeah, like one of them really shared like all this really deep stuff about his family. And after the 4 minutes was up and it was time to switch, like we ended up hugging, like this and that, right? So fast forward a few weeks later, we get the photographs back from the photographer and I see a photo from the speed date room and there was a photo of two people, like a guy and a girl, hugging in the background, but you could not see their faces. And I assumed it was her, so I screenshotted just the hug and I sent it to her. I was like, aha, this must be the hug that you were referring to. And she's like, no, that wasn't me because I wasn't wearing that. And I just thought, oh my God, there were multiple hugs happening in the speed dating room, like complete strangers meeting for 4 minutes and they're hugging after. Like, what in the world, you know? Like, how cool and like special is it that people were having such great conversations and like hugging after it was over? So I don't know, that was really cool. I think as far as feedback in terms of things that we could improve, you know, one of the questions that we had asked, okay, so let me like just level set. So the way we structured the speed dating was 4 minutes to speed date, 30 seconds to take notes, and then 30 seconds to move to the next table or location. And we had asked the question, like, did you feel 4 minutes was sufficient for speed date? And I would say a good majority said they would have preferred a little bit more time. Actually, is that what it said?
Julie, say the numbers. Give the numbers.
It's a little blurry.
Yeah. So 51.3% of people said that they would have liked an additional 1 to 2 minutes. 28.2% of people said that they would have wanted an additional 3 to 4 minutes. And only 20%, so a fifth of the room, thought that 4 minutes was sufficient. So overwhelming majority, over 75% of people thought that we needed to give more time than just 4 minutes. But again, these guys haven't experienced speed dating before. It is in the nature of speed dating to make conversations rapid. So you have to find a balance between, you know, depth and breadth here.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Julie, based on this, I'm looking at these numbers and based on this data, we should extend it. But then it wouldn't really be speed dating. So what do you think?
Right. So I think this is an opportunity to kind of like level set on what a speed date is. A speed date is supposed to be quick, right? It's only supposed to give you a quick glimpse into feeling out initial impressions and, you know, giving you like a little teaser to see, okay, are there people who you found intriguing enough that you would want to continue the conversation after the speed date is over? And so with that being said, like, when you think about just like the world of speed dates, speed dating events, like I looked up a bunch of speed dates events locally to Austin, literally just as I was like prepping for this podcast episode. And amongst the 4 or 5 events that I found, all of these events had the speed date rounds be 3 minutes or less. Wow. And so I think with that being said, like 4 minutes is definitely, I think, more on the generous side in terms of time. But like Matt was saying, there's a balance, right? Like everything is a trade-off. And so there's so many logistics and details that are impacted when we change the speed date round duration from 4 minutes to 6 minutes, right? Or 7 minutes or whatever it is. So to be able to give people longer time to speed date either means we have to now have an event that goes, I don't know, 6 to 8 hours to accommodate longer speed dates. Or if we don't extend the duration of the entire event, it means that perhaps some people will have less speed dates, right? Like, would you rather have 15 speed dates that are 4 minutes? Or would you rather have 8 speed dates that are 7 minutes long, you know? Or, now we have to have a bigger venue, that means it's going to cost more, which inevitably means the price that we charge people is going to be more, right? And so there's all of these like logistical things that will get impacted when, you know, you're talking about like longer speed date durations. And so I think that's important for people to be aware of, is that there is a balance to strike as far as time, space, costs, etc.
Yeah. And I think the only other thing that I want to add about feedback from participants is about the size of the dating pool. So we surveyed people and 74% of people said that a dating pool size of 125 to 150 is perfect. 23% of people said that the dating pool should have been larger than 150. And, you know, the remaining 2% thinks that there should have been less than 125 people. So it looks like the number of people that we ended up getting, Julie, was perfect, at least based on this pool. They liked it. At first, we were like, is it too little? Mm-hmm. And then in the end, it was like, was it too much? And it's just right. So yeah. I think this is a solid number.
Yeah, because I think when you have so many people, when you have like an event where there's 500 or 800 people, which some of these other events that are out there are that large, it's hard to actually make quality connections and get to know people because there's so many. I think there was like other miscellaneous things that people had said, like, I don't know, like there were too many papers to keep track of between like the note trackers and other things, which I think is fair. Some, you know, we can definitely take those things into consideration for the future.
100%. And we are. It'll be a lot more digital experience next time around.
Yeah.
We're working hard to make it so that there's a lot less paper involved.
Well, actually, that like goes nicely into our next question, which is, things we would have done differently. I think, like, you know, we didn't have a playbook for how to do this. So this was very experimental. It was a lot of trial and error. But I think one thing that sticks out to me is just being more efficient with the data collection process from applicants. I mean, we sent so many forms to people to fill out throughout the several months leading up to the event, because it was a lot of, we were figuring things out as we were doing it. And there were several points throughout the journey where it was like, oh shit, like we needed this piece of information. We missed asking them about this. Like, oh crap, this is important that we overlooked. And so I think by the end of it, we had so many different data sets of people's information to like string together. And so not only was it one, I'm sure, annoying for them. It's like, oh, you're constantly being asked to fill out new information. And they're probably thinking, right, like, why didn't you just ask me this the last time you asked me to fill something out? Which is honestly totally fair. And then two, just for our purposes, too, because it was so annoying having to collate like 5-7 different data sets in Excel and do all this like matching and stuff.
How many VLOOKUPs have you done in the past 6 months?
A lot of index matching and VLOOKUPs, but I also work in finance. I work in FP&A, so I literally do Excel all day for my job. So
I don't think I'm authorized to do this, but here's an advertisement. If any of you guys are trying to learn Excel, please hit up Julie George. She's excellent at Excel. So hit her up, ask her for help. I'm sorry, Julie. But I just pawned you off.
Oh my God. Right, keep going. YouTube is also a really great place to start. But yeah, it was just like stringing together different data sets scattered in different sources. So yeah, I don't know. I think we have full confidence that we'll be far more efficient next time with that. Yeah.
Yeah, full confidence. We're going to make it a lot more streamlined. Yeah.
Anything else that comes to mind that could have done
I sort of done differently. What were your thoughts on the, because I think with the drink tickets, by the end of it, I don't think they were even collecting drink tickets and people were just like drinking. And we heard some commentary that some people got a little drunk at the end.
Yeah. So I think with the drink tickets, so we gave 4 drink tickets. To me, I felt like 4 was a lot for a, so to give context, it was a 4-hour event. It was supposed to be a 4-hour run, 5 to 9 p.m. It ended up going later, but I wanted to give fewer drink tickets. I think I was like vetoed on that. But I think the way we rationalized 4 tickets was 1 drink per hour. And like apparently some people were getting drunk really fast. I heard from women, both in person and through the feedback forums, that like toward the end, their dates were really drunk. And so I don't know. It's one of those things like there's only so much that we can try to control. Like we try to communicate several times. Please be mindful of your alcohol consumption, because we know in like dating environments, it's really easy for people to just like drink because they're nervous. Right. I don't know. What did you think? Like, what do you think would be like a good amount of drink tickets to do in the future then? Or I guess maybe better monitoring the drink tickets.
I don't know.
Who knows, honestly, because people were like sharing tickets or giving tickets away.
Because when we were discussing this, I remember my opinion. My opinion was very much no one's going to humiliate themselves in front of, like, they're there to try to make a good impression. So I was of the opinion, like, no guy's going to be stupid enough to go drunk. And Julie, I guess, was a little bit more pessimistic. She's like, no, man, you underestimated. You
know? Yeah.
But, you know, so I think I was definitely, I am not optimistic, but for some reason, when it came to this, I was being ridiculously optimistic. I'm like, no, guys are going to behave. Julie's laughing. Like,
so I didn't personally see any like debauchery happening.
Neither did I.
Yeah. I don't think there was any kind of like debauchery that was like so evident. I'm guessing it was probably like when you're so close to someone, you can smell their breath or they're just kind of slurring or being a little bit more handsy than they otherwise would. I think it was probably some of that.
Honestly, I think it's when you're asked a complicated question at a speed date and you're just slurring your words. So tell me about your family. It's like, oh my God, I think that's more of what it was, because I didn't see any of it. Like we would have kicked them out if they were being weird. Right. So.
Right. I think things we would have done differently. One thing that comes to mind is like at the very beginning when we initially put out that we're doing this event, we use some language like first come, first serve, which in hindsight, I don't think we should have used that, because it kind of made it seem like there wasn't really a selection process and that it was kind of like an open invite and that, you know, as long as you submitted the application, you would get a ticket, which I think we quickly learned once the application started rolling through is that the reality of dating is that there has to be some level of curation and like taking into account people's dating criteria and factors and things like that, right? It's not just like, oh, take 100 people, throw them into a room and say, go. I mean, you could do that. I'm sure events do that, but it does compromise on the quality of the matches and ensuring compatibility and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also don't know that we made it super clear. Again, a function of us just doing this for the first time. I don't think we made it super clear that how people answer the questions and the completeness of their applications would be utilized in the selection process.
Right.
And so I think that's something that we can, I guess, do a better job of so that like people know, okay, the way that I'm filling out this application is going to ultimately be used and how the people are selected to attend the event and stuff.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So is there a behind the scenes memory you can share from the event that you both experienced that was or is unknown to the public?
Go ahead. Can I start with this?
Yeah, yeah.
So when we performed the matching and the scheduling, everything was quite time sensitive. So we couldn't risk people being late. We couldn't afford Indian Standard Time for this event because that would have broken a lot of the things that we had planned, right? So to hedge against that, what we had communicated to our participants was like, hey, be here by 4:45 or we are closing the doors.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And Julie, when we were initially about to drafting this comp, Julie initially had, we might close the doors, and I removed it.
Like, we may not let you in or something
Julie
like that.
Julie put, we may not let you in. And I changed that. I'm just like, no, we will not let you in. Right. Because I'm like, Julie, I understand you're being nice and kind of, we cannot risk people being late. So as a result, at 4:05, one of the volunteers like tugs on me and Julie on the side. They're like, Matt, Julie, we have like a participant here already. We're like, wait, what? It's 4:05 and we were not ready. We were not prepared. God. We were not set up. We were like setting up. And then we're like, oh my God. So then, you know, when I said how to talk to them, I'm like, hey, like, you're here 40 minutes early. He goes, yeah, I didn't want to be late.
Yeah.
And that's when Julie and I realized for the very first time in history, we had 98 or 99% of people reach before 4:45. And that is, you know, that is a record in the Malayali community for an event. Who has done that? Nobody's done that. But yeah, I think that was like the first BTS, I think. It was funny. We were just like, dude, you have to wait here for the next 40 minutes. We can't do anything.
Right. I think one of the learnings for us was that like, okay, the initial check-in process was chaotic. I think we were underprepared for the amount of manpower that was going to be needed for like venue setup the day of. And as a team, like we've talked through it and, you know, what we would do differently for the future, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, like Matt was saying, between like 4:30 to like 5 o'clock, I mean, we were nowhere near set up that we should have been. And we didn't have enough people. There were boxes everywhere. Like it was just chaotic. I couldn't find where things were. The stations weren't set up. And then like the lines were forming. And I just remember
it was hot.
Like, it was hot. Yeah. Like at 4:50, I go outside and there's like so many people outside. And the check-in area was so small. So now there's like a huge line forming outside. We have a bottleneck at the check-in center because we didn't have enough people there. And I just go in into like that main area. At this point, it's like, I don't know, 5:02 or something. And in my mind, every minute feels like forever, right? And I see Ramya, who was one of the volunteers. She was manning the check-in station by herself. The paper schedules are all over the place. People look so annoyed because it's like a freaking 100 degrees, right? They look hot. They looked annoyed. And it was so chaotic. And then I remember like my body, which just started to disintegrate into 1,000 pieces. Like, and this is the case even at like 5:15. People are still outside. The venue, the main event hall still looked chaotic. And I was like, Matt, we have to do something. And Matt was so calm. He just took charge and was like, okay, everyone, this is what we're going to do. We're going to pivot, blah, blah, blah. We're going to move everyone into the powwow rooms. And like in that moment, I was so thankful that I had a partner who could like, who could handle like the crowds and just being able to like stay calm and collected. Like, oh my God, I was so thankful that you were there. But, you know, then, yeah, we just kind of pivoted the plan a little. We took everyone into the powwow room. So for context for listeners, like we had before like the speed dating portion started, we had gender specific powwows. So we had like the women go into one room just to be able to mingle and hang out and meet each other. And I led that. And then there was a separate one for the men's and like Matt led that. Right. And so after the powwows were over and we went back into the venue, like the venue was set up. It looked so beautiful. It looked phenomenal. And I was like, okay, things are going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. But woof, Lord, like that 45 minutes before. And the crazy thing is we started our pre-event setup was we had the place reserved from 3 p.m. onward. So the event started at 5. So we were supposed to have like 2 hours, right, to set up. The funny thing is at one point we even entertained the idea of only having a 1 hour setup, which would have been just completely.
We wouldn't have succeeded if we did that. But, you know, by this point we're just like, oh, the costs are adding up. Can we do it in an hour? We're like, you know, we could probably do it in an hour, but in hindsight, absolutely not. Next time we know we need more than 2 hours to prepare for sure.
Yeah. But I honestly think the 2 hours could have been fine, but I think we just needed more manpower and more like concrete plan for the setup and who's doing what and, you know, et cetera.
I think it's more about who's doing what.
Yeah. Like people have like specific roles and responsibilities. They know they show up at 3 and like I'm supposed to be taking care of XYZ. This person's going to do
right, XYZ
here. But
yeah.
Okay, cool, cool. Talk about the team, how you found the team and any team memories. So basically what we did was in our original application for people who are applying to join the speed dating event, we had a question that said, are you interested in volunteering or helping plan this event? And I want to say we had like 100 people who marked yes. And so to those 100 people, we had then followed up once we were ready to start planning the logistics of the event. We sent out a specific inquiry form that said, hey, we saw you were interested in helping out. Please complete this application so that we know a little bit about who you are and like what your skills and interests are and things like that. And I think like just over 20 people actually filled out the form. And then of that 20 people, like we had reached out to them, set up little one-on-one sessions. And then I think we asked 12 people to officially join the team. And then we had split them out into like different areas of focus as far as event planning. So
yeah,
go ahead.
Just a quick correction there. It's not 100 people. I just checked. It was 199 people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
My interest forms, you said they wanted to help out and volunteer.
Yeah. Yeah,
It was 100 at one point, but yeah, it just kept growing because people wanted to help out. But yeah. So that's how we found the team. Favorite team memories.
Well, okay. Before we get to the team memories, I want to point out that one, we had a fantastic team. I think anytime you're dealing with human resources, whether it's volunteers or hiring someone at work, like you're taking a chance on them, right? You're taking a chance that it's going to be a good fit, and it isn't always. And so with that being said, like even though we started with 12, we had a few people that initially joined and then dropped out or fizzled out for whatever XY reason. And that was kind of to be expected. But I think with that being said, as long as you're winning more than you're losing, you're fine. And so we were very grateful for the people that we had, and they were so excited and committed to FIM. I think by the end of it, we had 8, I believe, people who were remained as part of the team, like from the beginning to the end. But yeah, I think we found like such great people. Like they are good humans to their core, patient, understanding. They were so collaborative. They, you know, got things done with like a sense of urgency and like all of these things that you want in a good team. And so we were very, very grateful for that.
Yeah, I can speak to like my single favorite team memory, more of a personal thing, but I was working on a lot of the code for the event for all of the different software things that we needed to get done. And as time passed, you know, my attention needed to go elsewhere as well. So we brought on this absolutely gem of a human being, Zebby, onto the team, and he expressed some interest in also helping out with the software side. So slowly started getting him involved into that process, and he was slowly helping out. And then before I knew it, he was helping out a lot. And Zebby's a phenomenal programmer. So he would make changes and I would catch up when I could, and then he would make more changes. And we would just kept doing this little dance. And it got to the point where I'm like, I don't have the capacity to keep up with everything. So then I remember distinctly telling Zebby, I'm like, Zebby, I am placing the single most important part of this entire event, all of the scheduling algorithms, into your hands. Like, it is up to you to build this. By the time you're done with this, I'm not going to know how to use this. Like, I won't know. So I'm trusting you with this. So the fact that I felt comfortable enough to give him the single most important part, it was in that moment, I'm like, oh my God, I trust this guy.
Yeah.
Like, I actually trust this guy. Like, I can't believe I am, like, relinquishing this power. Like, I didn't think I would do that, but I did. And it was an absolute pleasure working with Zebby, but he got us to 99.999% efficiency in terms of scheduling, which is like, oh my God, yeah, this guy. My initial draft or my initial rendering of it got us to like 80 to 85, and he just completely optimized everything and just made it so perfect. Yeah, so that was my favorite team memory. I feel like Julie and I worked with different, you know, we worked with different volunteers more closely. I worked the closest with Zebby, who was the programmer, and also with Jenny, who was in charge of a lot of our social media content. So I would work quite closely with these two, and it was lovely.
Yeah, I will say that what I loved the most was seeing the close bonds and friendships that formed amongst the volunteer team. Like, they have become really good friends and they hang out on their own, whether it's in person or just like hanging out virtually, which is so sweet. Like, that's what you want, you know, when you're like building a team. Like, it's so much easier to get through the grind of whatever hellish thing that you're working on when you actually like the people that you're working with. And so I think that was like really cool. But I mean, we would like, I just remember like seeing them on Discord, being on Discord meetings or like just meetings in general so late at night. And I was just so thankful that we had this crew of people who were so committed to the cause. I mean, like, seriously, some of these team members were like putting in hours that of a second job, honestly.
Yeah.
And so we were, I mean, because like, especially those last few weeks, like, holy shit, like, I know you were very spread thin. I was very spread thin. Like, my brain did not have any capacity for anything else but FIM. And so just like having team members that were like as committed to just carrying through, we were so grateful.
Yeah, sure. It was. Yeah, the dedication was definitely, it's gratitude that we have. And I still remember this one moment, one of the volunteers was like, hey, this is what I have so far, but I can give another iteration on Saturday morning if you want it. Julie and I looked at each other. We're like, we need to tell her to just relax. Like, relax. Like, don't worry about it. Enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And one of my personal friends was on the volunteer team, and I was talking to her, and I'm like, yeah, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I'm watching a movie. I'm like, oh, really? With who? She goes, oh, you know, the volunteer team. I'm like, what? What do you mean? Like, she goes, yeah, we hang out and talk all the time. And I was so happy. I'm like, oh my God. I told Julian. That just makes us happy.
For sure. Next question was, what was it like working with such a big team for the event? Did you know all of them?
Well, first of all, no, we did not know all of them. I think Julie and I definitely meeting the majority, the grand majority of people for the very first time, with the exception of Bobus, actually. So Bobus was the man who manned the speed dating room, and he killed it. One of the feedback forms, and Bobus, if you're listening to this, we haven't told you this yet. One person was like, yeah, Bobus is great. He has some awesome big bro energy. So. Yeah. But you know Bobus personally, right?
Yeah, just a really good dude. You know, we are part of the same Austin community. And so he was actually one of the first people I met when I moved to Austin. And he is just really great at bringing people together. And a lot of the community that I have here in Austin today, I have to give him credit for. So I remember when he reached out to me and told me he wanted to help with FIM, I was like, oh my God, of course. Like, I would love to have you. You'd be great at it. Let's go.
That's Bobus. Then we have Zebby. Obviously, I talked about him earlier. He's the programming genius. He was also the event planning team. Then we had Jenny from the block, aka Jenny. I didn't know Jenny personally, but oh my God, Jenny, you are such a delight to work with. I know I worked pretty closely with you on all the graphics and everything. So all the pretty stuff that you saw on our FIM page was all Jenny. So
yeah. I remember one time I made something in Canva and I showed it to Matt, and he like basically insults me and tells me that it low-key looked bland and to send it to Jenny. So the first time I spoke with Jenny on the phone to talk about volunteering for FIM, I got such great vibes from her. And you know, the vibes don't lie. But I was like, I feel like I could be really good friends with her. I need to be friends with her. And now she's my friend.
Oh, man. Who else? Then we had Kevin. He was also the event planning team. And what's funny about Kevin, and I learned this after the fact, is in my personal interactions with him, especially when I was getting to know him, he was always a little bit of an introvert, a little bit of a quiet person. But one thing that we did was we did, what's it called?
Superlatives.
Superlatives, right? So we asked our volunteer team. It's all anonymous. No one knows. We're like, hey, who's most likely to be the life of the party? And Kevin unanimously wins. And I'm just like, wait, what? So this man is hiding a part of himself from me for some reason. But one day, Kevin, you and I are going to party and I'm going to see exactly what everybody else sees. And we're going to have a good time.
He's a DJ.
Oh, right. He's a DJ. Yeah, that makes so much sense.
And the funny thing is, he definitely gives me vibes like he knows how to throw banger parties, which is funny because, you know, I don't think I got that impression of him when I first spoke to him. But now I could see it. I could definitely see it.
Right. Now, that makes sense. Who else we got? We got Sharon, our in-house counsel. Oh, wait. No. I don't think I'm glad to say that, Sharon. I'm sorry.
She does not legally represent Finn.
Okay. You know what? You're right. Let the record reflect that Sharon does not legally represent Fallen Molly Olive or Matt or Julie George. There you go. Okay, let's start over. No. Sharon, oh my God. Sharon saved us so much by helping us with all of the contract stuff and helping us think of so many of the, I guess, legal nuances of hosting an event, which I wasn't really aware of until I read the contract. I'm like, oh, right. We have to actually care about that.
So I think we both concluded like, wow, Sharon must be a fantastic trial attorney because
right.
she set up our contracts and like just bulletproof the crap out of it. Like I remember Matt and I were, it was like 1 a.m. and we're like reading through this contract that she had drafted for us. And we were like, what does this mean? But we know one thing is that she's really good at her job.
That was a hilarious moment. But yeah, anyways, then we obviously had Sinu, who was also on the participant. So we had a couple of teams. We had the event planning team. Then we had the participant administration team, which is what Sharon and Sinu were part of.
I think what I appreciated about Sinu was she was very rational. So when we would ask the team for like focus group type inputs, she'd give really well thought out, like rational perspectives.
Then we had the group arrangements team who were in charge of making sure the nightlife on Saturday night and Sunday activities were all smooth. And that brings us to Rebecca and Jordan. Rebecca, she is sassy. She sasses me. Oh, my God. Well, I feel like by talking about this, I'm encouraging this behavior. But yeah, she is the youngest Gen Z kid on the team who is extremely sassy. And I will leave it at that.
You know, I like her Gen Z sauce. Yeah, I think it keeps things spicy. I think there's almost like a decade age gap difference between Rebecca and I. And I've gotten to know her a little bit outside Fim. And I feel like our relationship is more like big sister vibes. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if she sees it that way, but that's how I see it.
Okay, cool. And then obviously the smoothest guy in all of, well, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the smoothest guy in all of the event, but definitely on our team, Jordan. Such a smooth talker, man. Like, I can't get over how much of a smooth Casanova type this guy is, but Jordan, what a guy. And obviously, last, no,
wait,
I didn't miss
it. I forgot Rumya.
Oh,
Rumya, how do you forget Rumya?
Right. You want to do it?
Rumya is literally one of Matt's closest friends, right? Like, she's right. One of your closest friends. So I really didn't work with Rumya. I mean, we kind of worked together like a little bit, but like not super closely until the weekend of the event where I had come to Dallas a few days before the event and so did Rumya. So we both stayed at Matt's house and we like ended up sharing a bedroom together and we just like bonded so much. And I was like, oh my God, we are literally the same person.
Yes.
We think the same way. The way we process things and think through things is like very, very similar. I was like, I really like you.
Yeah. There was a moment where you guys are sitting next to each other and I just looked at you both and I'm like, oh my God, you guys are very freakishly similar. And then on Sunday, actually, you guys wore the same outfit. I realized that yesterday, and I texted him like, hey, by the way, were you and Julie coordinating your Sunday app? And she goes, no, it was a coincidence. I'm
wait,
like, that's cute.
Really? That's so funny.
Yes, take a look. It's the white shirt, light blue jeans. But yes.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry,
Rami. I'm looking at it right now. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to forget about you, Ramya, but I guess it's because I'm like, of course you're my friend. You will help and volunteer for something that I'm doing. I'm definitely taking that for granted. But then last, most certainly not least, we have the one, the only Leslie. Leslie was the lead for the event planning team, and she actually stitched a lot of it together.
So it's funny because with Leslie, I remember when we first had a call with her, and it was originally just supposed to be me and her, but I think you and I, Matt, we were like already meeting right before that. And I was just telling you, oh yeah, I'm supposed to get on this like one-on-one with Leslie, who I was supposed to meet for the first time to talk about like possibly volunteering with the event. And you were like, oh, let me just join too. So then it was us three on this call. And by the end of it, we ended that call and both Matt and I, we just like looked at each other and we're like, yes, we feel like we can trust her. So yeah, Leslie right. did a fantastic job leading event planning. I think event planning for sure is like the heaviest lift. That team like had a really good team, like amongst, you know, the four or five of them, just like they're just really collaborative and they got along so well and problem solved. And like the way that they work together, it's very evident that they also had a really strong leader. So,
yeah. But yeah, to answer the long-winded question is, yeah, we knew very few people. A lot of people were meeting for the first time and it was wonderful working with an awesome team. So
for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's move on to the next question.
Yeah.
How did your parents or family support FIM? Okay. Can I just say that Matt's mom was a godsend. Like, this woman is legitimately the Indian Kris Jenner. Okay, she is momager. She swooped in like maybe 2 weeks before the event. And at that point, we were like huge deficit. Okay, like thousands and thousands of dollars in the hole. And she just fixed so many of our problems. She got us all these new sponsors like out of nowhere. I don't even know how she did it. Literally within 2 weeks, negotiated all these deals so that we could save money in these other areas. And we were like, oh my God, why did we not have her involved from the beginning? Because she is like FIM, a Sharon George production. I can already see it. Like, she is very, very smart, very business savvy. So your mom was like very, very supportive.
Yeah, she definitely came. I think it's different when someone's your parent. You kind of take their skills for granted a little bit. And it didn't really hit me until Julie told me. She goes, Matt, I feel so much better knowing that your mom is going to be there at the event. And that didn't even occur to me. I'm just like, really? I'm like, it's just my mom. But then I understand now. She completely takes charge, takes command. She was making the sound guys help with the catering. Like, it was just, she is a tiger of the most powerful and independent order.
Yeah.
She got us out of a huge deficit. If it wasn't for her, we would be in the hole thousands upon thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
But she like called up her entire network. She goes, hey, we're hosting this event and we're looking to sponsor. You're going to have this. It was just remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. Prior to the event, I had spoken to her on the phone a few times. And I think after it was when I realized, like, wow, she's really smart. She's really savvy. And that's when I said to Matt, like, I'm really glad that she's going to be there, because we know that whatever chaos is going to happen, like whatever shitstorm is going to happen the day of the event, like, she is going to be there to help fix it. So, yeah, really fun to work with. She was great.
So thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Sharon Auntie. So my parents on the other end.
I didn't mean to laugh. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh.
No, we're laughing because that's a whole other thing. So my parents are straight up boomers. Okay. I think my parents probably have almost 20 years on your mom, but my parents are very like old school. They're very traditional. And so my parents have centered their entire existence, mainly my mom, on me getting married. And so anything like hobby or side hustle that I'm doing that isn't explicitly me getting married is a huge waste of time to her. I would say that 90% of the time, my relationship with my parents is really good, like really, really good. The 10% of the time when it's not is when we discuss triggering topics, which we have learned are triggering topics over the course of the last decade, one of which is like, when am I going to get married? This has literally been a point of contention for a decade at this point. And so with that being said, my parents were not really vocally supportive of me doing FIM. The week of the event, they were very supportive because they knew like I was under a lot of stress, moving at like 100 miles an hour. They were like calling, they were, you know, praying for me, like don't worry about anything. It's going to be good, blah, blah. But beyond that, they wouldn't vocalize any kind of support because to them, it's like, oh, I'm wasting my time. Like, why are you planning events? You should just be focusing on getting married, right? And so the week that we ended up in the newspaper, which also by the time of this recording, we haven't actually put out that we right. ended up in the newspaper. But anyways, so by the time...
Not just any newspaper. You need to call Malayalam Manorama, yo.
Yeah, so we got featured in all of these Malayalam publications, right? Like Malayalam Manorama, which is, I think, the largest Malayali publication in the world or something. Kerala Express, like all these like huge Malayalam newspaper outlets featured us, wrote an entire article about this event. Like Matt and I were featured on it, like our individual photos. And
the volunteer team was also on there.
Yeah, the volunteer team, like, it was like an article commending us for this amazing, basically community service that we did, right? And I thought, for sure, my parents are going to be so happy to see this. Like, how could they not be, right? Their daughter's face is in the Malayali newspaper. Of course, they're going to be so proud. And so I sent 4 links. The moment that your mom forwarded me the links, I forwarded that to my parents. And it was a group message with my mom and my dad. Do you know what happens? Like, literally within 2 seconds, my mom calls me and starts wailing basically on the phone, like, what is this? What are you doing? Oh my God, as if she was embarrassed. And I was so dumbfounded. I was like, is this for real? Like, I legitimately thought that they were gonna call me in for once in their lifetime, tell me, like, good job, Julie, you did a good thing. Like, nope, did not get that. Basically, she was like, get married first and then do these other things. So that is the extent of the support that I got from my parents.
Oh boy.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
No, nothing. I'm just like, just the roller coaster of emotions there. I started off with my mom and her support, and now, you know, the lack of support.
Yeah. It was definitely a stark difference there. Okay. So somebody asked relationship dynamics between each other. Can you read that question?
Yeah. What is your relationship like with Matt? Discuss the relationship dynamics, growing pains, and why you two are a good team. And I will start. Throughout the course of working with Julie over the past 6 months, there has been only one moment where I felt a little insecure about working with her. I'm like, maybe this is a really bad decision. And this was actually the weekend of the event. So for the weekend of the event, Julie actually drove up from Austin and stayed with me at my place. So a day before the event, I was at my fridge. She was at the kitchen and I took out some pizza from the fridge. And I'm like, hey, Julie, I took it out. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to heat this up. Right. Julie grabs a slice of the cold pizza, takes it and bites into it like a maniac, like a sociopath. And I'm like, what? She goes, yeah, I like my pizza cold. And I looked at her, and that was my moment. I'm like, wow, I am regretting a part of this, because that is insane. That was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. And you were not joking. I looked at you because I thought you were pranking me. I mean, that's a pretty funny prank if you're just trying to get a rise out of me. But no, you were 100% serious. So
I love that cold pizza.
Oh my God, that's not normal, Julie. Poll your audience.
No, I bet you there's people listening who like cold pizza.
No, this is not a thing.
I prefer cold pizza. Like, I prefer the day after cold.
Okay. Let's make a bet. Just real-time bet. So what percentage of your audience, if you make a poll, like, do you eat cold pizza? What percentage of your audience do you think would say yes? My prediction is sub 8%.
Oh, really? Okay, my prediction is like 30%.
30%?
Yeah.
Impossible. Okay. I think it's going to be way less.
We'll do this poll. Okay, so we have this recorded. You said 8 minutes, or sorry, 8%, less than 8%. Well, I said 30%.
Well, technically, if I'm under 30, don't I just win automatically? Wait, isn't that how this works?
Well, whoever is closer. But I think the point is, you think it's a very small percentage. I think it's a much more material percentage.
Fair enough. All right, cool. This is memorialized. Do not edit this out. I know you control what gets edited in and out of this podcast. Julie, I will remember this. But more seriously, though, Julie, do you want to comment on what your business relationship is like with me?
Yeah. So to be clear, like, we were literally strangers when we started doing FIM. So I think one of the best pieces of advice that someone told me, and remember I shared this with you, was that you have to communicate with your business partner like you are a married couple. And so sometimes that's really uncomfortable. Sometimes it's really hard. Sometimes you dread it, but you do need to have those conversations. So do you remember like 2 months into working on FIM, we had like a 3 hour meeting where we were airing our grievances toward each other?
It wasn't 3 hours.
Okay, it was a long time. It was like two hours.
I don't think it was 2 hours.
Really?
It was a lot less.
Really? It felt so long to me.
No. I remember. So Julie and I got, the high level is we got on a phone call with like a business partner and we did not prep for this together. Like we weren't aligned. We just kind of winged it together just to see what happens. You know, but like we weren't concerned or anything. We're like, yeah, let's go into it. Turns out that she and I had completely different approaches to navigating the business proposition that was presented to us. And at the end of the call, Julie was like, hey, like, you want to have a conversation? So we talked. And based on some of the things that Julie was saying, she goes, I feel like, okay, I'm going to say this. Maybe you can edit this out. She goes, Matt, I'm kind of waiting for you. And I looked at her, I'm like, it sounds like you literally sound like a wife. And then she goes, Matt, I've been told that successful businesses are like work wives, work husbands. Because the way she phrased that, she's like, Matt, I'm waiting to hear something from you. I'm like, I want to hear that. And I died. No,
but I think in that meeting, we realized we are very different people. Like the DNA of who we are.
Oh
are
my God,
very,
yes.
Very, very different. And so I definitely think that there's been some like growing pains that we have definitely overcome. And I think we are better as a result. I will say Matt is like, he is a creative genius. There's very few people that I've met in my entire life who has as many skills and is as talented as Matt. And so you want to know a funny story? There was one day that I was definitely annoyed at you. And I was like, who the hell is this guy? So I went on your Facebook. I looked at your Facebook for the first time and I start scrolling through all these old photos of you and I'm seeing these videos of you singing and playing the guitar. And Matt is like a really great singer also. Like he's like actually a great singer. And I'm like, how does this man do so many things and he's good at all of these things? So I don't know. I think it's great. Like he does a lot of different things. And I'm like, where do you get time and brain space to do all of these things?
Well, I do appreciate that compliment, but now I'm extremely curious. What did I do that made you very annoyed at me? When was this?
I honestly don't remember which.
Have you been annoyed at me?
There's been times that you've been annoyed at me too. You even told me.
There's been one time.
There's one time where Matt got mad at me because I posted an Instagram photo and there was like
the borders.
The margin was off by like 0.008 millimeters.
It was off. So the only time I ever had an issue was when she posted something on Instagram on our business page and the borders weren't aligned perfectly. Like that was like the only issue. Other than that, it's been such a delight. And I'm going to just echo my sentiment in my post about you. Yeah, you are. I definitely felt by the end of it, I think she had to put up with more than I had to put up with her like that.
What? No. Oh, yeah, you mean in terms of each other's personalities?
In terms of each other's.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And like, I got all laughing. She's like, yeah, for sure. She doesn't hesitate. She's like, for sure, man.
So, okay, I want to give some more insight into our working team, because I think one of the questions is like, why you're a good team? So, like I was saying, like, I think Matt, he's definitely like a really great visionary, right? Like he can wear that CEO type of hat well. He's very good at building out the vision and strategy and like direction. And I think I wear more of like a COO hat where like I carry on the operational and logistical aspects to help execute said vision, right? That comes a lot more naturally to me. And so I think from that standpoint, we make a good team. But I think what also helps is that we both individually, we set a very high bar for ourselves of like delivering something with quality. I will say Matt is probably 1% more than me because of, you know, he's very particular about margins, even if it's off by like 0.009%. But I think we're both committed to this idea of like, if you do something, it has to be done well and with a high degree of proficiency and excellence and all of that. And so I think being aligned on that definitely made just business decisions and like executing on things like a lot easier, because very rarely would we have material differences or viewpoints on something that we wanted to put out there. Because I think we both care a lot about what is attached to our reputation, and we want to make sure that it's good and that it's like high quality.
Yeah, I think that's a really strong common denominator for us. We both do care a lot about the quality of things. We would rather move a little slower and focus on the quality as opposed to the quantity of things. And all of our conversations and business decisions are predicated on that principle. So like every decision that we made was based on making sure that we're doing it right. Mm-hmm. Like there were so many things that we axed because we were like, actually, we don't have the confidence of pulling this. It doesn't seem it's going to be amazing. So let's not do it. Let's start small. We had a lot of people express interest, but we're like, you know what? We know we can probably handle a crowd of 150 people. We don't want to overshoot and be like, yo, let's make this for 300, 400 people. Like we didn't do that. We're very aligned in those business decisions. Yeah. And I think another point that, you know, another thing of the dynamic is we ended up bringing on a volunteer team, a really big team. And Julie is way better with people. Julie's very good with people. She's definitely a people person. I thought I was a people person. Look at her laughing. If you're listening, you can't hear that. She's laughing. She's laughing so hard.
Only laughing because I'm anticipating what you're going to say. I don't know what you're going to say, but okay, go on.
No. So I have delusions of grandeur. So I definitely thought that I was a good people person. And then I partnered with Julie, and then I realized, no, Matt, she is a good people person. She is great with people. For a little bit of context to that, we asked our volunteer team for some feedback at the end of this FIM 1.0. We're like, hey, what were Matt's strengths? What were Matt's weaknesses? What were Julie's strengths? What were Julie's weaknesses? What are areas that Julie can improve on? 85% of Julie's weaknesses were people saying, hey, you could use better Wi-Fi. Hey, you could get a better router. Because on calls, she would sometimes drop off. So that was the entirety of her feedback. It wasn't even her. It was an infrastructure issue. So on this podcast, I'm not going to talk about the areas for my improvement. Let's not discuss that. Julie's cackling. Yeah, we're not going to discuss my areas of improvement on this. That's probably... Just know that Julie is the best people person I've ever seen.
I think that we balance each other out. Yeah. Okay, I think that is a good place to almost wrap up. Last question. This podcast is going to be so long. Are you thinking of doing another one? What are the locations? What can people expect for future events?
Yeah, I think we can say we do plan on doing this again in the future. And Julie and I have been extremely data-driven. In our first one, we listened to where the people were, where they wanted to do this. We did a lot of polling. So we're probably going to do that again. And we haven't actually discussed this question, really. But I personally, Julie, feel free to chime in. But I have my eyes set on either a New York or a Chicago. So that's where my mind is saying, well, let's take the focus away from Texas. We did it here. Let's consider the Northeast or Chicago. What about you, Julie? Where's your heart pointing?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think both the Northeast and Chicago, we have huge concentrations of people. So I think that makes sense. And someone even submitted one of the questions was, are you guys going to come to the Northeast? So I'm sure there's a lot of people that would be happy about that. But yeah, I think it makes sense to continue with the momentum that we've had and pick some big populated metropolitan cities. I think it'll just be challenging from like a planning standpoint because we're like physically not there. But I think that's something we can manage for sure.
Okay.
But awesome. I think that's it. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. You can also connect with us on Instagram at thebrowngirl_podcast and all other social media platforms listed in the show notes. Thank you again. I appreciate you being here.